welcome to the Raising Kellen podcast. My name is Marsh Naidu, and I'm a physical therapist as well as parent raising my son Kellen, a 10-year-old boy with cerebral palsy. I blog at raisingkellen.org, where we curate resources to empower and educate parents raising children with disabilities. This digital platform is a free resource and part of a 501c3 nonprofit registered in the state of Tennessee. If you are a business or individual interested in supporting our mission, hop over to the website raisingkellen.org, where you can see what sponsorship looks like. This year, we look to investigate the infrastructure that is in place to help support adults with disabilities, such as housing, transportation, education, employment, as well as medical care. As always, remember the information provided on this podcast is purely educational, and if you are seeking advice for your specific situation, to always contact a trained professional. In today's episode 79, we are joined by John Schaus of Nashville, Tennessee, who is going to be sharing with us his wisdom and knowledge of advocacy. So put those feet up, relax, grab a cup of coffee, and get ready for some awesome conversation. Welcome to the Raising Kellen podcast, John. We are so honored to have you join us this morning.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
Guys, just to let you all know that John Schaus and his wife, Janet, live in Middle Tennessee. They are the proud parents of three adult children, Emma, Evan, and Brendan. Now, we've actually met Emma before on, I believe, episode 60. Emma is the communications director at the Tennessee Council on Developmental Disability. Your twins now, John, Brendan, and Evan, are 27.
That's right.
And Evan is on the autism spectrum. I heard a few through David Hirsch on his podcast, Dad to Dad podcast on the Special Fathers Network. I was going through David's episodes and I said, well, let me just check and see who's in Tennessee. And that's how this connection came about.
Thank you for saying that. That's very kind. I enjoyed doing David's podcast. I think he's got something like 200 plus that are released now. And he just did one with Temple Grandin that was released. So that's an interesting one. But I really enjoyed being on his podcast.
I just want to let the listeners know too, John, go and listen to that episode 52 that you recorded with David. So I think it would definitely be a precursor to this episode. I am very much interested in learning more about you, John, and specifically about the advocacy work that you do, sir. Now, I believe you're actively involved with Autism Tennessee, as well as the ARC Tennessee. And from what I gather, this is very much a family affair for y'all as well. Can you please tell us a little bit about the origins of your advocacy work?
Well, sure. It is very much a kind of the family business, I guess, disability advocacy. And like most parents that get thrust into this world after a diagnosis for a child, we didn't really know much about the larger disability world before Evan was born. There was a young man in my neighborhood that I knew growing up, Randy, who had Down syndrome, who had a lot of challenges, and he actually lived away from his family, and I would see him when he came back for visits periodically throughout the year. But other than that, I graduated high school in 1975. That was the year that IDEA was passed. So prior to that, it wasn't a federal requirement that kids with disabilities be educated alongside their peers in the public schools. There were special education classrooms in my schools going back. The children with disabilities showed up at a different time, and they ate lunch at a different time, and there was just really no interaction. So it wasn't a natural part of my growing up experience the way that it is for many students these days. And I think that that's a huge benefit that we have now for kids, is that disability is seen, hopefully, as just a natural part of the human condition. But when Evan was diagnosed, you know, like many parents, particularly parents with children like Evan on the autism spectrum, it's not something that you learn about before the child's born or right at the time of that they're born. It's a diagnosis that comes later. You've had this child, and you begin to see, as we did with Evan, begin to see some, he's not meeting certain developmental milestones, and you go through an evaluation. So his diagnosis came prior to age three, and I will never forget the day that Janet and I sat in the psychologist's office who diagnosed him, and she, after having done all the testing and evaluations and whatnot, she pulled her chair up close and very kindly said, "Have you considered that Evan might have autism?" You know, we didn't know anything about autism. We'd seen the movie Rain Man, and we thought, well, that's not Evan. But we really didn't know anything about it. And, you know, it was the first time that a professional had used that word. We'd begun to suspect that maybe that's what it was. But, you know, back then, 27 years ago, the incidence rate was so much lower than it is now. I think at that time it was like 1 in 2,000. So we were thrust into this world, and, you know, at once it was devastating and scary, but it was also a relief in a way to have a name that we could put on this, the A word, and we could kind of jump in and start to learn. She made two recommendations that day. One was, there's an organization here called the Autism Society of Middle Tennessee. She said, get plugged in with that group. They'll have lots of information for you and workshops and that sort of thing. And she said, also, I would really encourage you to seek out other families and draw close to them, because you will learn more valuable information and get more strength and encouragement from families who've kind of been there and trodden this road than you will ever get sitting in front of a, you know, a professional like me. Back then, I looked up Autism Society of Middle Tennessee. I tried to look them up on the web, and there really wasn't much of a website at all. So I looked them up in the Yellow Pages, because that's what we
did. I remember what that is.
And I found out that their office was actually fairly close to my office. So I decided to go over there at lunch one day, and I thought, you know, I'll kind of sneak in and see if they've got, you know, some brochures. They were in the offices with the Tennessee Disability Coalition, which housed other specific organizations serving the disability community, such as the Center for Independent Living and the Brain Injury Association, organizations like that. And of course, the Tennessee Disability Coalition is quite an active force in the disability community too, which I had no idea at the time. But I went in, and there was a rack there with some literature about autism. Your child has autism. What do you need to know? You know, that kind of stuff. And I was pulling a few things off the rack. And there was a woman in the office there who said, "Hi, my name's Laura Lloyd. Is there something I can help you with?" And Laura was at the time the executive director for the Autism Society of Middle Tennessee, now known as Autism Tennessee. And I sat down and just started chatting with her, and ended up staying about 2 hours that day. And I just remember very clearly that when I left, I had two things in mind. One is, I need to call Janet and tell her, we're not alone. There's a big community of people out here that are dealing with this. We're not alone. That was a very powerful thing that I had learned that day. The other thing that was on my mind when I left was, why in the world did I volunteer to do their website? So I was actually doing some websites on the side at that time, and I had volunteered to go in and do theirs. So I got involved with that organization right away. And within a year or so, they had an opening on their board, and they asked me to be on their board. And I had never been on a nonprofit board before, really. So I didn't know what was entailed in that, but I jumped in, and it's kind of been a whirlwind ride in the disability community ever since. I learned early on the difference that we can make when we come together as one and speak with a common voice and try to advocate, try to make the case known to people who have the ability to change things for our loved ones, that when we speak together with one voice, that we can often bring change about. So I feel very fortunate that I learned that lesson early on, and have been able to do a lot of things in that arena.
The Tennessee Council holds a really interesting and exciting program, and that's called the Partners in Policy Making. John, now I believe you went through the program. Just tell us a little bit more about that. Ms. Caitlin Smith and Emma came on about last year talking about the program and trying to advocate for parents joining the program.
Oh, gosh, I would love to talk about it. It's I went through in 2003. Have you gone through Partners, by the way?
Honestly, that is on my to-do list this
do
year.
It.
Yeah.
Just
At first, like the 7 months of the program running was like, oh, my goodness, am I going to be able to?
Yeah, 1 weekend per month. At least when I went through it, I don't know how much the format's changed in the intervening years. But when I went through it in 2003, you're right, it lasted 7 months. And we would come together on a Friday evening, late Friday afternoon, and stay Friday night all day Saturday and finish up at the end of the day on Saturday. And it starts off with, at least back then, it started off the first session kind of learning about the history of the disability movement. As I said, IDEA was passed in 1975, and you kind of learn the way that people with disabilities were treated historically through the years, you know, with institutions going back into the early years of the 1900s, and how things have changed through the years. And then in intervening months, you have in the months to follow, you have different topics each month that you go through, including learning the legislative process, how laws are introduced as bills, and how they get passed into law, excuse me. And it's kind of like the old Schoolhouse Rock thing. I'm just a bill sitting here on Capitol Hill. You kind of really learn the nuts and bolts of that process and get to go down to the legislature and see how it works. And you learn to what it's like to sit in front of a legislator and make a case for a particular thing. You do some mock sessions like that. So it was absolutely a fascinating and life-changing experience to go through that. But the biggest part of it and the most incredible part was meeting the other people that were going through Partners at the same time that I was. It's, as you said, it's open to families, to parents and immediate family members, and to people with disabilities. So we had a mixture of parents and siblings and people with disabilities. And for me, and I think for a lot of the parents going through, parents of younger children, it was the first time that we had the opportunity to be around adults with disabilities who are just out there in the world living their life and dealing with their challenges and doing pretty well. Thank you very much. Not that they didn't have challenges, because of course, you know, we all have challenges and people with disabilities certainly do. But, you know, they were just out there in the world living life. And it kind of gave me a vision, and I think for other parents and siblings as well, it kind of helps give them a vision for what their own loved one's life might be like down the road. And of the, you know, 20 odd people or whatever that went through Partners with me way back then, this is the 20th anniversary of the year that I went through. I hadn't really thought about that till this very second. Wow, 2 decades. I still talk to many of them and see them around at events like, you know, the Disability Coalition's Day on the Hill or other events, or just encounter them out in the world. And it's great to catch up and just see what they've been involved in. And many of them have gotten, you know, very involved in the disability community. So you do make friends, and it's a wonderful program. And I can't speak highly enough for the way that it helped reframe my thinking about what it means to be a person with a disability, what it means to advocate for people with disabilities, and what it means to be a parent. So I loved Partners, and I would heartily recommend it to anybody who has the opportunity to go through it.
Thank you for that, Sean. I think the Tennessee Disability Day on the Hill is actually coming up on March the 11th, I believe. Mm-hmm. And you're right, the Tennessee Disability Coalition does an amazing job bringing together different nonprofits, you know, to advocate for the policies that are mm-hmm. on the table on mm-hmm. the Hill, so that in a way, it presents a united front, and it engages different organizations. Yes,
very much. And the coalition and the ARC and the other groups that are involved in organizing and setting up Day on the Hill do a great job of having materials available ahead of time to know what are the real kind of hot button issues that are up before the legislature this year. By then, any bill, you know, the policy, what am I trying to say? The filing deadline for bills is coming right up, I think, this week. So when Day on the Hill happens, and do you know the exact date? Is it March? It's in March this year, March 8th or March 5th, somewhere in there.
I have it right. I was March the 8th, I believe.
March 8th. Okay, so by then we will know what bills are on the table and hopefully moving forward a little bit. And as I was trying to say, the coalition and the other organizations do a fantastic job of letting the participants know ahead of time or that day when they show up what bills are out there and who the sponsors are and what the talking points around those bills might be. What are the points that people need to have in mind when they go in and sit down, hopefully with their legislator, and say, hey, this is really a big deal for me and my family, for my loved one with a disability. But at the same time, while you do have the access to kind of understand what's going on in those bullet points, that's not the important part of advocating and participating in something like a Day on the Hill. What's important anytime you reach out to a policymaker is just to tell your own story and the story of your loved one, because that's what they relate to. You know, they have people come in, lobbyists all the time, and people with various organizations saying this is important and this is important, and laying out those bullet points. But to really hear from real people whose lives are impacted, real Tennesseans, or, you know, if you're doing it at the national level, real citizens saying, this is my family, this is our story, and this is why this bill is important. It does make a big difference. Just one example among many, Evan currently lives in supported living through our one of our Medicaid waivers in the state of Tennessee. The DSPs, the direct support professionals who work as his staff in his apartment, he needs 24/7 support. So he has this, we work with an organization called Support Solutions, fantastic organization in our experience. The direct support professionals who work with Evan, the wages that are available to pay those folks are just, you know, you can make more money going and flipping hamburgers at McDonald's or Burger King, frankly. So to be able to go in and make the point that these people are professionals and they are doing an incredibly important job in society in supporting people who need those kind of supports, helping them have access to the community and to live their best lives, they should be paid more than they're currently being paid. And to advocate for the state to make additional funding available for them, that's one of the things that we've advocated for in recent years. Back when Evan was in school, it was often something maybe through the Department of Education that we'd go in and talk about, or, you know, so there's always something that impacts you and your loved one directly that you can go and talk about. And it does make a compelling case when the legislators hear you speaking from your heart, or if you can take along your loved one, if that's appropriate, hearing directly from them or seeing them. It makes a big difference to touch the hearts and minds of the people who hold the purse strings and can really make a difference in our loved ones' lives.
John, Autism Tennessee, can you tell us more about this organization, sir, and its mission?
Sure. And I'm not involved with Autism Tennessee as I once was, but I do stay in touch with what they're doing, and I can speak to certainly to the way that it was in the past and what they still continue to strive to be. You know, as I said, when Evan was first diagnosed, the first thing that we thought is, where do we turn? You know, what's out there in terms of supporting us as a family and supporting him. And one of Autism Tennessee's missions is to connect with those families and to let them know that, as I said, they're not alone. You know, back in the day when I was president of the organization, we had parent representatives, I think they still do, that you could call in and talk to somebody directly on the phone who would listen and offer suggestions and advice and just sort of help you hit the ground running. And they held workshops on a monthly or bi-monthly basis, an orientation so that families could kind of begin to understand autism from a family perspective and also from a professional's perspective. I know this is hard for us to believe now in 2023, but back when we first got involved, you couldn't just Google autism and find a whole lot of websites that gave you reliable information. There just wasn't that much stuff out there online. Evan was diagnosed in 1998, I think. Yeah, 98. And the end of 98, I believe. So there just wasn't that much information out there. Now, if you Google autism, you'll get 9 million hits, and some of them are good. Many, many, many of them are good, but not so many. So, but there's also a lot of junk out there too. So one of the missions of Autism Tennessee is to be able to give families reliable information and help them get plugged in and connect with one another. And that's a huge, invaluable function. I know they currently have support groups that they either run or sort of help curate a bit for people on the spectrum, including young people, adolescents, adults, that sort of thing, to help them find one another and connect. And it's just a tremendously valuable service to be a resource to families, to bring all this autism information together and John, help to be knowledgeable.
John, I'm curious as to how do you approach self-care? What are some of the strategies that you have in place?
Well, that's a huge thing for families, because for many of us who, you know, are out there, and we try to live full and complete lives, but the disability can eat up a lot of your energy and your focus and your time. So one of the things that I recommend to families all the time is don't let the disability rule your life, because it can if you let it. And certainly it's not that it's not important, it's not that it's not a big thing, but there's more to life than that. So for me, carving out some time just for John, I love being out in nature. So being able to go out and find a place to walk in the park or walk in the woods is a big thing. I'm an avid reader. I have been my entire life. So finding that quiet place that I can sit with a cup of coffee and a good book and just sort of lose myself for a while. And I've recently discovered Audible. So I listen to a lot of audiobooks, and being able to do that while I'm out somewhere. So that's a big part of self-care for me, is just to realize that despite Evan's challenges and everything that we deal with from a disability standpoint, it's not all there is to life. And the other things that I tell husbands and wives when I have an opportunity, and tell dads, and I, as you know, I'm very passionate about helping dads connect with one another, is, you know, go out and have a date night sometime where the ground rule is, we're not going to talk about the disability tonight. We're not going to talk about the autism or Down syndrome or whatever it is. You and I are going to go out to dinner, to a movie or whatever, and let's see how long we can go without talking about our child with a disability. And for Janet and I, it's always funny, because the conversation always comes back around to something. Eventually, it just does. But it comes from that mindset of life is many faceted, and you have to kind of reach out and embrace all of it. Yeah.
That's what I in my quiet moments, I always think, you know, just live richly.
Yes, wholeheartedly is my word. Yes. One of my words for 2023. I want to live wholeheartedly, and I love live richly. That's a great way to say it too.
John, you are also an amazing writer, and I love your visualizations. So, guys, John has a blog called theverystuff.com, which I would encourage you to check out. Now, I haven't had a chance to read the book you co-authored, John, but it's called The Autism Checklist: Guide for Parents and Educators. Just a little bit about that, sir, if you don't mind.
Sure. One of the books that I read early on, and I would absolutely recommend it to any parent of a young child with a disability, particularly autism, but it's applicable for a lot of disabilities, is by Paula Kluth. And the book is called You're Gonna Love This Kid. It was a life-changing book for me. And just real briefly, the story on that book is, when Paula was a brand new special education teacher, she was reviewing her caseload prior to the start of the school year. She'd just been hired. She went into the building and she was going through all the files of the students. And then she found this file that had this drawer that had multiple files on a kid. And I can't remember his name. Let's say Jason. And it's like Jason this and Jason that, and, you know, and she goes, wow, I got a lot of Jasons. And then she realized it was like all the same kid, and there's like all this negative stuff. He won't do this and he can't do that, and he's defiant about that, and he refuses. And she's like, how am I going to deal with this? Oh my gosh. And she was kind of worried about it and was out in the hallway and saw the administrator who had hired her and said, how are you settling in, Paula? And she said, well, I'm reviewing the caseload and there's this kid, Jason. And the administrator said, you're going to love this kid. You are absolutely going to love this kid. He is so interesting. He knows everything there is to know about blah, 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 whatever. And she's like, you know, in that moment, I realized there's two ways to look at any student. You know, you can either focus on the negatives and the challenges and all of that, or you can say, you're going to love this kid and look at the amazing positive stuff. So that was a huge, huge message to me, because so many of our kids, particularly kids with autism, are so fascinating when you get to know them, the things that they're interested in and the thing that really lights them up inside. They're just cool. They're just cool people. And yeah, you know, there are challenges that we all deal with, but if we look for the good, we can be amazed by anybody. And if you support kids with disabilities in the right way, regardless of what their challenges are, they will surprise you every time. I really believe that with my whole heart. So having said that, Paula reached out. I got to know Paula. I went to hear her at a conference, and she ended up doing a keynote for the Autism Society of America when I was on the board for them here in Nashville. We had a national conference, and she was our keynoter here. So I got to know Paula, and she had reached out to me and said she'd been approached by her publisher to Jossie Bass to write this book called The Autism Checklist. They had a whole series called The ADHD Checklist, The Down Syndrome Checklist, and they approached her to write The Autism Checklist. And she said, I will do it, but only if I can do it with a parent. And they said, sure, that's fine. She said, I can cover the education part, but I feel like I really want a family member, a parent, to co-author it with me. And they said, sure. And she reached out to me, which was very, very kind. So yeah, we co-authored this book, The Autism Checklist, and very proud of it. I don't think it's at the top of anybody's bestseller list, but it's good, solid content, and I would heartily recommend it, particularly to parents of school-age kids with autism.
I would love for you to tell us about the plans that you guys are making for the Middle Tennessee Dad Meetup.
Sure. Yeah, I would be happy to. Another dad and I had really jumped in and restarted a dad's meetup group several years ago, where we would get together once a month and just go out and have dinner and sit around and chat, just dads of kids with autism or related disabilities. Then when COVID came along, it just kind of nuked everything. And, you know, we tried meeting via Zoom, and it just wasn't as it wasn't as good as being face to face across the table and, you know, being able to talk one on one with folks. So even though we did have a few Zoom meetings, we kind of let that fall by the wayside for a while. And now that that's, you know, largely behind us anyway, I still know lots of people with COVID right now, but it just seemed like it was time to get back to meeting face to face. And I had recently met, you'd mentioned my podcast with David Hirsch. Through David and his organization, I'd met another local dad here who had huge energy to do this. His name's Matt Rabine. He works at Lipscomb University, and he and his wife have a son with ASD. And he was really interested in meeting other dads too. So we're starting back up. Our first meetup is going to be the first Monday in February, February 6th. We'll figure out what works going forward for the majority of guys that show up. But the guy that I was doing the dads meetup with before said, this is just a chance to get together with some other guys who might understand one aspect of your life, a little bit about one aspect of your life. And the thing that he always said is, I haven't walked a mile in your shoes, but I shop in your shoe store. Meaning that, you know, there is some commonality there and some shared challenges and shared joys and that sort of thing. And it's just cool to be able to hang out with some other guys. And,
It's just hanging out.
That's exactly right. And we certainly get around to talking about what's going on in our families and our marriages and with our kids. But it's not a real structured sort of, well, this month we're going to have this program and we're going to talk about, We just let the conversation go wherever it will. And, you know, some of the guys that I have met through that have become really good friends. And I have every anticipation that by starting back up, that I'm going to be able to reconnect with some guys that I haven't seen for a while and to make a lot of new friends, too. I'm really excited about jumping back in and doing this again.
Sean, thank you so much for your time this morning. If there are guys that want to reach out to you, sir, how could they do that?
Well, my email is jmshouse, just jmshouse at bellsouth.net. They are welcome to reach out anytime that way. Or as you said, my blog site is called The Very Stuff. And that sounds like a weird name when you first hear it, but it comes from a science fiction story that I read when I was a kid, where somebody said, look, here on the ground, the very stuff we've been looking for. So that's where that phrase comes from. It's the very stuff. And it's at theverystuff.com. And there are links on there where you can email me directly as well. I'll reach out.
Thank you so much, John. You have an amazing rest of your Saturday.
Well, thank you so much. This has been absolutely a joy, and I'm glad for the opportunity to meet you, and I can't wait to check out all of your podcasts.
Thank you for listening along on the podcast today. As always, remember, the information sources listed on the podcast can be found in the show notes. That date again for Tennessee Disability Day on the Hill is March the 8th. And for more information, check it out on tndisability.org. And as always, remember, get to the top of your mountain. This is Marsh Naidu signing off.